Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The United States and its partners have launched Operation Epic Fury, one of the largest, most complex, most overwhelming military offensives the world has ever seen. Nobody's seen anything like it.
Conflict spreading across the Middle East after the U.S. and Israel launched an unprovoked war on Iran and assassinated Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. At least 550 people have been killed in Iran since Saturday. President Trump says the war could continue for weeks. Iran's retaliated by striking Israel as well as U.S. allies across the Middle East. Israel's mobilized 100,000 reservists as it threatens to reinvade Lebanon. Israeli strikes on Lebanon have already killed at least 31 people. U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres is calling for peace in the region.
Military action carries the risk of igniting a chain of events that no one can control in the most volatile region of the world. Let me be clear, there is no viable alternative to the peaceful settlement of international disputes. Lasting peace can only be achieved through peaceful means, including genuine dialogue and negotiations.
We'll speak to two Iranian-American professors, one who was on death row in Iran for years. We'll get a report from Israel and look at how the U.S.-Israeli attack violates international law. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Iranian Red Crescent Society says more than 550 people have been killed since the U.S. and Israel launched a full-scale military assault on Iran early Saturday. The unprovoked attack prompted Iran to launch missiles across the Middle East, targeting Israel and Gulf Arab nations. The joint U.S. and Israeli war on Iran began with a daytime assault on high-security compound of Ali Khamenei, Iran's 86-year-old supreme leader. He was killed in the attack, along with his daughter and grandchild, and with Iran's defense minister, the head of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the chief of staff of Iran's armed forces, senior intelligence officials, and other Iranian leaders. Scores of civilians have also been killed in southern Iran. A missile struck a girls' elementary school in the city of Manab, killing at least 165 people. Nearly 100 others were injured. Video of the aftermath shows rescuers searching through twisted concrete and rubble strewn with textbooks and backpacks as screams are heard in the background.
As we entered the school, we saw the body of a teacher that had been cut in half. And as you can see, we are still clearing the debris, and even now, body parts are still coming out.
In another strike, 18 people, most of them children, were killed in Lamert in southern Iran when a missile struck residences and a gymnasium. About 100 people were wounded in that attack. In a video message, President Trump called for regime change and urged Iranians to take over their government. On Sunday, Trump confirmed reports that three U.S. service members have been killed, a toll that's since risen to five. Trump said there would likely be more injuries and deaths ahead in an operation he said could last for weeks.
For almost 50 years, these wicked extremists have been attacking the United States while chanting the slogan, death to America or death to Israel or both. They are the world's number one state sponsor of terror. We are the world's greatest and most powerful nation, so we can do something about what they do.
President Trump launched the attacks without congressional approval. They came shortly after Omani mediators held a breakthrough in indirect talks between the U.S. and Iran and and Geneva when Iran agreed to zero stockpiling of uranium as a guarantee that it would not pursue a nuclear weapon. Iran's foreign minister Abbas Araghchi condemned the U.S. for abandoning diplomacy.
Contrary to Americans, that their record is very bad and very negative. You know, this is the second time that we negotiated with Americans and they decided to attack us right in the middle of negotiation.
In Israel, an Iranian ballistic missile struck a residential district of Beit Shemesh on Sunday, killing 9 people and wounding 27 others. Another strike killed a woman in Tel Aviv. Other Iranian missiles were intercepted by Israeli defenses, including one that crashed onto a street in Jerusalem, injuring several people. Iran also launched retaliatory strikes against all Gulf Arab nations that host U.S. military bases, with the exception of Oman, Bahrain, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia. All were struck. One person was killed in Abu Dhabi, another person killed in Kuwait, where a defense ministry official reported 3 U.S. F-15 fighter jets were mistakenly shot down by Kuwaiti air defenses. In Saudi Arabia, an oil refinery caught fire after it was struck by debris from an Iranian missile, closing a facility that processes over 500,000 barrels of crude oil a day. Shipping through the Strait of Hormuz has effectively come to a halt due to the U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran. Oil prices have surged to a 52-week high, with many analysts predicting they could soon top $100 a barrel. Hundreds of thousands of travelers have been stranded as all flights through some of the world's busiest international airports have been grounded. Stock markets across Asia opened sharply lower on fears the attack on Iran will slow the global economy. Lebanon's health ministry says at least 31 people have been killed and nearly 150 wounded since Israel launched renewed airstrikes on Beirut's suburbs and other parts of Lebanon on Sunday. Tens of thousands of residents of southern and eastern Lebanon were seen fleeing their homes after Israel ordered people in nearly 50 villages to evacuate ahead of a planned bombing campaign. Israel's military says its renewed war on Lebanon comes in response to missiles and drones fired by Hezbollah in retaliation for the assassination of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. They were Hezbollah's first major violations of a ceasefire that took effect in November 2024. During that time, the United Nations peacekeeping force in Lebanon, known as UNIFIL, documented more than 15,000 ceasefire violations committed by Israel. Officials in the United Kingdom say an Iranian drone struck a British airbase in Cyprus overnight, causing limited damage and no casualties. Iran's attack came after British Prime Minister Keir Starmer said he'd agreed to the Pentagon's request to use British military bases for what Starmer called defensive strikes on Iranian missile sites. Separately, France said it was sending 2 warships to the Red Sea to join a European naval mission. Meanwhile, Germany's foreign minister denied reports that Berlin was seriously considering joining the war against Iran. In Spain, Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez condemned the U.S.-Israeli strikes as a breach of international law.
Se puede estar contra un régimen odioso.
It is possible to be against a hateful regime, as Spanish society as a whole is against the Iranian regime, and at the same time be against an unjustified, dangerous military intervention that's outside international law. One must be against a war that was started without the authorization of the United States Congress or the United Nations Security Council.
On Saturday, Russia and China requested an emergency meeting of the United Nations Security Council, where China's foreign minister called for an immediate ceasefire and the resumption of talks. Russia condemned the U.S.-Israeli attacks as another unprovoked act of armed aggression. Today, U.S. First Lady Melania Trump is presiding over a U.N. Security Council meeting titled Children, Technology, and Education in Conflict. It's the first time a spouse of a world leader has chaired such a session and comes just days after U.S.-Israeli strikes killed scores of Iranian school children. The White House says top Trump administration officials will brief both chambers of Congress Tuesday about the U.S. strikes in Iran. President Trump launched the attacks without congressional authorization, which is required under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. On Saturday, Democratic Congressmember Ro Khanna of California and Republican Congressmember Thomas Massie of Kentucky demanded swift action on a war powers resolution that would rein in Trump's attack unless Congress approves military action. This comes as top Democrats, including Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, are under fire from anti-war groups who note they oppose Trump's attack on Iran on procedural grounds rather than opposition to war. A Reuters Ipsos poll conducted over the weekend found only one in four U.S. residents approves the U.S. strikes on Iran. In Pakistan, at least 24 people were killed Sunday as angry protests over the U.S.-Israeli attacks on Iran were met with violence. In Karachi, security guards at the U.S. consulate fired on demonstrators who breached the outer wall, killing 10 people. At least 14 were killed in northern Pakistan, where demonstrators vandalized several buildings and set fire to United Nations regional offices. Meanwhile, Pakistan escalated its war in Afghanistan. Afghanistan's Taliban over the weekend with an attempted strike on Bagram Air Base, the former U.S. military base north of Kabul. Hundreds of soldiers and scores of civilians have been killed in cross-border fighting since Pakistan announced a state of open war with Afghanistan last week. In Texas, at least two people were killed and 14 wounded early Sunday during a mass shooting at a bar in a busy nightlife district in Austin. This marked the 58th mass shooting in the United States so far this year, according to the Gun Violence Archive. The FBI is investigating the shooting as a possible act of terrorism after the suspect reportedly wore a shirt with an Iranian flag design and a hoodie with the words "Property of Allah" printed on it. The suspect was identified as 53-year-old Ndiaga Diagne, a naturalized U.S. citizen from Senegal. He was fatally shot by police. Trump's Republican allies have manipulated the shooting to perpetuate anti-immigrant hate speech and policies, but have again refused to call for stricter gun reform laws. At least the identities of the victims have not been made public. At least three of those hospitalized were in critical condition. Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel has condemned the U.S.-Israeli attacks on Iran, saying, quote, "The execrable act constitutes an unscrupulous violation of all norms of international law and human dignity." His remarks came as President Trump continued his threats against Cuba. On Friday, Trump said the United States may launch a so-called friendly takeover of the island.
"They're in a big deal of trouble, as you know. They have no money, they have no anything right now, but they're talking with us, and maybe we'll have a friendly takeover of Cuba."
Former President Bill Clinton denied having any knowledge of sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's crimes during a six-hour closed-door deposition Friday in front of the House Oversight Committee. Clinton's sworn testimony marked the first time a former U.S. president has been compelled to testify before Congress. He's also the most high-profile figure to respond to questioning following the release of the Epstein files. This is part of Clinton's opening statement, which he shared on social media.
"I saw nothing and did nothing wrong. As someone who grew up in a home with domestic violence, not only would I not have flown on his plane if I had any inkling of what he was doing, I would have turned him in myself and led the call for justice for his crimes, not the sweetheart deal we got."
Former President Clinton's testimony came one day after his wife, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, told the committee she didn't know Epstein. Bill Clinton flew on Epstein's private jet a number of times in the early 2000s. He also appears in a photo with Epstein and a woman whose identity was redacted sitting in a hot tub. Clinton adamantly denied knowing the woman in his congressional testimony. And a North Dakota judge has said he will order Greenpeace to pay damages estimated at $345 million, a move that could potentially bankrupt the environmental group. Last year, a jury sided with Energy Transfer, the corporation behind the Dakota Access Pipeline, a closely watched trial and lawsuit by the Texas-based pipeline company, which accused Greenpeace of orchestrating criminal behavior by training and providing funds to the indigenous-led protests at Standing Rock between 2016 and 17. Greenpeace argued the lawsuit was part of a conspicuous attempt by corporations to destroy the right to free speech. Last March, Democracy Now! Spoke to Deepa Padmanabha, senior legal advisor for Greenpeace USA.
What's really important to know is that, you know, this case is not just an obvious and blatant erasure of Indigenous leadership, of Indigenous resistance, but it's this case is also so much bigger than just Greenpeace. It is an attack on the broader movement and all of our First Amendment rights to free speech and peaceful protest.
Judge James Guyon previously cut the jury award nearly in half from more than $670 million to about $345 million. Greenpeace could appeal to the North Dakota Supreme Court. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. and Israeli war on Iran has entered its third day. According to the Iranian Red Crescent Society, more than 550 people have been killed in Iran since Saturday. The dead include Iran's 86-year-old Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, who was assassinated in an airstrike targeting his compound. A number of other top Iranian officials have been killed, including Iran's defense minister, the head of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, and the chief of staff of Iran's armed forces. Iran says an Israeli airstrike on a girls' elementary school in the city of Manab killed 165 people, mostly girls. Nearly 100 others were injured. Iran has retaliated by launching missiles targeting Israel as well as U.S. allies, including the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Kuwait, Bahrain, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and Cyprus, where an Iranian drone hit a British airbase. In Saudi Arabia, the country's largest oil refinery was forced to halt work after an Iranian drone attack. Israel's now threatening to reinvade Lebanon after Israel and Hezbollah exchanged rocket fire on Sunday. At least 31 people have been killed in Lebanon. Israeli authorities say 10 people have died in Israel since Iran began launching retaliatory strikes. President Trump launched the attack on Iran without congressional approval or the backing of the UN Security Council. In a video message Sunday, Trump again pushed for regime change in Iran.
I once again urge the Revolutionary Guard, the Iranian military, police, to lay down your arms and receive full immunity or face certain death. It will be certain death. Won't be pretty. I call upon all Iranian patriots who yearn for freedom to seize this moment, to be brave, be bold, be heroic, and take back your country. America is with you. I made a promise to you, and I fulfilled that promise. The rest will be up to you, but we'll be there to help.
During his remarks, President Trump also confirmed 3 U.S. soldiers had been killed, and he said there would likely be more. U.S. Central Command announced today that a 4th U.S. service member has been killed. Earlier today, 3 U.S. fighter jets were shot down over Kuwait in what CENTCOM has described as a, quote, apparent friendly fire incident, unquote. All 6 air crew ejected safely. The U.S. and Israeli attack on Iran Saturday came a day after the U.S. and Iran held indirect negotiations in Amman. Following the talks, Amman's foreign minister said, quote, a peace deal is within our reach. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi spoke to Al Jazeera Sunday.
Well, Iran has been always open to diplomacy. And I think we have a very good record of that. Contrary to Americans, that their record is very bad and very negative. You know, this is the second time that we negotiated with Americans and they decided to attack us right in the middle of negotiation. Well, if their goal is change the regime, that is a mission impossible. The demise of the leader doesn't mean that, regime change or the change of the political system in Iran. No, we have a very well-established political system. We have a very rich constitution. And based on that, state institutions are in place. They are doing their job, their function.
For more, we're joined by two guests. In Philadelphia, Golnar Nikpour is Associate Professor of Modern Iranian History at Dartmouth College, author of The Incarcerated Modern, Prisons and Public Life in Iran. And here in New York, Behrouz Ghamari Tabrizi is a fellow at the Center for Place, Culture, and Politics at the CUNY Graduate Center. He was previously professor and chair of the Department of Near Eastern Studies at Princeton University, the author of several books, including Islam and Dissent in Post-Revolutionary Iran, a memoir about his years on death row in Evin prison called Remembering Akbar, Inside the Iranian Revolution, and his latest book just out this year, The Long War on Iran, New Events, Old Questions. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Professor Ghamari, let's begin with you. You were on death row in the Evin prison in Iran for, what, more than 3 years. You are now observing what has taken place this weekend. There was a big piece on you in Haaretz in Israel a few days ago that talked about your warning about taking out Khamenei and this possible strike that we're seeing today. Mm-hmm. Respond to what has taken place over the weekend.
This was, first of all, thank you for having me here. I think one of the most important lessons that we are learning here is that these attacks are causing much suffering for Iranian people, and it's destroying the space in which Iranians were struggling for social justice and civil liberties. This is exactly the opposite of what Iranians wished, and this destruction is causing tremendous harm to Iranian people.
As we're speaking, Defense Secretary Hegseth is holding a press conference at the Pentagon. He and the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Dan Kane. American forces are hitting Iran, Hegseth said, surgically, overwhelmingly, and unapologetically. And then he went on to attack the media. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the significance? Well, the opening shots were against a girls' school in southern Iran. But now, between Israel and the U.S., hundreds of attacks on Tehran and other places in Iran.
Yes, the first wave of attacks happened at the office of the Supreme Leader, which caused him and the top echelon of Iranian military and defense apparatus to die. And I think that was a moment that Ayatollah Khamenei, who decided to remain in his office and remain defiant to American threats, and it was very clear that he cared about his own legacy rather than trying to run away or hide in any bunker. Many of his advisors told him that it's not safe to be in his office, and the story that I've been reading in Iranian press is that he refused to leave his office, and he said that if 90 million of Iranians have shelters to go to, I would go to shelter after them. But he remained in his office and became a martyr for his revolution.
Which is very interesting. We were talking on Saturday in a special broadcast we did with your colleague, Professor Ervan Abrahamian, who said this is an 86-year-old man who's dying of cancer, mm-hmm. and now he has been martyred.
That's right. That's right. And he always remained defiant. I mean, people who believe in his mission, believe in his ideas, now are celebrating the fact that he remained up to the last moment of his life, remained defiant, and he wanted to follow the path of Yahya Sinwar of Hamas, and that kind of legacy is very, very important for him and his followers. And we saw that hundreds of thousands of people in Tehran and cities around the country and in the region poured into the streets and mourning his death.
So you've been imprisoned at the notorious Evin prison on death row. This was in the 1980s. And yet you warn against the toppling of this regime. Mm-hmm. Why?
Because I think that for in the past 40 years or so, there were so many important events happening inside Iranian society. Iranian society, a decade after decade, showed that they are capable of transforming their own society. Issues of social justice remained very prominent in Iranian society. Iranian women were very, very active in changing the conditions of their own life inside the country. And Iranian labor movement was very strong. Iranian students always were very strong. And I thought that at this moment, toppling the government without having a clear alternative only would damage those struggles that people have struggled to maintain throughout these past 40 years, would diminish. And I'm very pessimistic about the possibility of a regime change in Iran without having a clear idea of what is going to replace it.
Let's go to Professor Golnar Nikpour of Dartmouth. If you can respond to what has taken place over this weekend, what is happening in Iran right now that you are hearing? You're the author of The Incarcerated Modern, Prisons and Public Life in Iran, and who the leadership possibly is. President Trump, soon after the hundreds of attacks were taking place on Iran, and then Iran retaliating throughout the Gulf and against Israel as well, President Trump said to The Atlantic magazine that he was willing to talk again.
Yes. First of all, thank you so much for having me, Amy. I appreciate it a great deal. The situation in Iran, as you've noted, is quite dire right now. There have been innumerable military attacks across the country, over 550 reported killed so far. As mentioned, a great deal of the upper echelon of the leadership has been wiped out, including now former Supreme Leader having been killed, Ali Khamenei. A three-person leadership council has been created to manage the day-to-day affairs of the state as it decides on a new leader. And that includes current President Masoud Pezeshkian, important conservative cleric, Ayatollah Ali Reza Arafi, and Ghulam Hossein Mohseni Ejayi, who is Chief Justice of the country. It's also quite clear that Ali Larijani has been incredibly important in managing the day-to-day affairs of the country. So the leadership structure that remains is trying to promote an idea of stability, promote the idea that there is an internal systematic effort to replace those who have been already killed with the next in line, and to sort of stabilize the system both actually, and in its presentation. So that's the situation that we're in internally in the country. But it's quite a devastating attack on the infrastructure of the country, both in terms of the state infrastructure and civilian infrastructure. We've already gotten reports of hospitals being hit. And as you mentioned, the sort of opening salvo and the most devastating attack launched so far was against a girls' school in southern Iran in Minab, where well over 100 people have been killed, mostly children. So, yes, you know, I very much agree with Professor Qamari Tabrizi that this is a situation that creates a kind of code red internally in the country, wherein we're not seeing something like, you know, protests on the streets because people are concerned with avoiding the sure death of bombs falling. And I had reports yesterday from some contacts in Iran that people are using old bunkers or old facilities that they had used during the Iran-Iraq war to shelter in Tehran from the bombardment. But everyone is as far as I can tell, using makeshift sort of efforts to stay out of harm's way. Of course, the internet has been cut by the Iranian government again, which means that there is a trickle rather than a flood of information, and that there is a great deal of misinformation that people are being subjected to from malign